ॐ सतो मा सत्कमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतंगमय ॐ शांति शांति शांति। लॉर्ड लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, लीड अस फ्रॉम इग्नोरेंस टू इल्यूमिनेशन, लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ टू इमॉर्टैलिटी। ॐ पीस 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 बी अनटू ऑल। In our last class, we had discussed the 6 steps of spiritual progress according to Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And I also mentioned the last 2 steps are Dhyana and Samadhi. Dhyana means meditation. There is no equivalent word for Samadhi. So I am afraid we have to keep it as it is. Before going further, we must also discuss what results have been achieved so far by the cultivation of some of these good qualities that we have been trying to acquire, like non-injury, etc. Patanjali is very specific that even a bit of practice of these qualities produce immense results. Let us see in his own words what is the result. When a person acquires the quality of non-injury, ahimsa, in its broadest meaning, then every creature on this earth sheds its enmity and becomes friendly, peaceful, gentle, non-injurious. It's a marvelous thing. If everybody practices ahimsa, there will be no wars in families or between nations or communities. But this result has to be understood from 2 viewpoints. One, it's not that really everybody becomes gentle. A snake doesn't shed its venom and stop biting because it understands here is a saint. Even snakes bite saints too. Jesus Christ was an incarnation of God. Why was he crucified? Did he not attain to this quality of non-injuriousness? Why was he so cruelly killed? Many saints have been tortured. If you study the history of saints, you see that they had undergone a lot of problems. Either you have to say that they had not yet acquired those qualities nicely, or there is something wrong with the world. But what does it mean really? It means that the saint himself, the aspirant who practices these qualities, feels friendly with everybody. As a result, most of the people also react towards him in a gentle way, in a friendly way. Examples are also not lacking where in the presence of saints, tigers and snakes also become gentle. Even in ordinary experience, you see, some people are terribly frightened of dogs. What is the fear there? That the dog will bite me. And the dog also is thinking, this man will bite me. And so it also gets frightened. You are creating an echo of your own feeling in it. Especially you see it among children, rather our attitude towards children, towards animals, etc. But in general, if a person's mind is not harboring any wicked thoughts of injury, there is something which goes out and convinces the other creature also, this person is good. But there are creatures who are ferocious by nature. So it has to be, this result is very good, but should not be taken too literally. As Sri Ramakrishna says, God is present in a tiger, but don't go and embrace it. Next, when a person is established in truthfulness, his words come true. And there are what is called exaggerated examples, especially in Indian mythology, that a woman who was so very chaste that she didn't want the sun to set. So she simply said, if I am really chaste, let the sun not set. And so the sun did not set, which is a very bad thing. The whole world is trying to sleep and the sun is not going to set. But what it means is that a truthful person doesn't utter something contrary to normal day-to-day behavior. He only wishes everybody well, but at the same time, the words that he utter are a kind of prophecy. They only reflect what is going to happen. So in that sense, we have to understand. Sometimes, yes, they can also reverse in exceptional cases, ordinary fate, but that's very exceptional. You must understand it. Thirdly, a person who doesn't harbor any thought of stealing anything from anyone, precious jewels come to him. If only all the thieves come to know about this secret. Is it not wonderful? What they are trying to so hard to acquire, they will be just coming to him. But this also has to be understood in a different way. A man who doesn't covet anything, who doesn't place any value upon what we think valuable things, even simple things become very valuable to him. Ordinary food, ordinary clothing, ordinary house become so very precious. They are like jewels to him. His mind is completely satisfied with them. And if you value, then that thing becomes valuable. Do you know what is a value? Something is valuable because it is purchased from a Harrods shop. But that's not the real meaning. If you don't know what to do with it, then it's not valuable. What you value, that becomes very valuable, even if it be a very ordinary thing. But it is also generally a rule that those who practice non-covetousness, generally they become very rich. Somehow prosperity, wealth, other things come. Not only this is true with regard to things, a person who is trying to run away from name and fame, it comes to him. A person who is trying to lead a simple life, somehow nature doesn't like this man. Why is he an exception to the rule? Let me make him insane like anybody else, ordinary person. Monastic establishments. Take for example, Buddha renounced his kingdom and established his monastic order, Buddha Sangha. And what an enormous amount of wealth had accumulated in course of time. Even during his lifetime, people were so impressed by his renunciation, they started offering things. Saint Francis married the lady, most beautiful lady. You know what is her name? Poverty. And as a result, today Franciscan establishments are one of the most rich establishments. Ramakrishna Mission. Ramakrishna was a Tyageshwara. He did not touch money. The other day I was having a talk with a devotee. Ramakrishna's mother had a vision of Mother Lakshmi. Mother Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth and prosperity and happiness and all the goodies in the world. And she did not recognize, of course, at that time, who are you? Oh, I am just a passerby. Why don't you come to my house? It was night. Why, what are you doing, a young woman, in this desolated place? And that lady said, No, I'm in a hurry, I have to go very far away. Probably she is coming to the west. That was my guess. I will come sometime later. And that night happened to be a very special day for the worship of Mother Lakshmi, Kojagari Purnima. And this lady, Chandramani, Ramakrishna's mother, realized that it was Mother Lakshmi herself, because she suddenly disappeared without any trace. So that was the incident. Someone asked me, did she come? I said, so far as I know, in the life of Ramakrishna, she didn't come at the time of life of Ramakrishna. But certainly she has come. When? Now. All these are Ramakrishna's institutions. So Lakshmi is very abundantly present here in the Ramakrishna order. Certainly she has come. So, a person who doesn't have any covetousness in his mind, every simple thing becomes so precious to him. Precious not that he is attached to it, but that is more than enough, life-giving to him. But also it is true, those who truly practice poverty, there is a great likelihood of riches coming. You can also understand it in a different way. After all, every man gets some riches. So if a man is trying to lead all the time very poor life, eating the simplest fare and living in a simple house, what is he going to do with all the rest that is coming? In course of time it becomes quite a tidy amount, I believe. Those who observe continence, they acquire tremendous strength. Virya pratishthaya, virya labhaha. Who does it, is that, does it mean, does Jesus Christ look like a pahalwan? Like Mike Tyson? Does Ramakrishna look like a very strong man, like the first class boxer? No. What does it mean? That there is a spiritual strength. There is a moral strength. We always think in terms of only physical strength. No, that's not true. Austerity or observance of brahmacharya or self-control produces tremendous strength. Don't you see Napoleon, such a small man, short man, not that he practiced continence, but what a tremendous strength. Generals used to quake before him. You know that? Read his life. So if somebody observes brahmacharya, tremendous strength comes. And that strength aids a man in reaching God. That is the most important thing. If you become very strong, what are you going to do with it? If you don't know what to do with it, you are going to give a blow to other people, accidentally or purposely. But here strength means tremendous spiritual strength will come to them. They are immovable in their purpose. They progress towards their goal. There is no force which can stop them, deviate from them. That strength comes. Those who do not accept the gifts, any gifts from others, they, according to Patanjali, acquire the capacity to remember their past lives. Purva Janma Katha Vritsamvadaha. They somehow remember their past lives, where they were born, what they did and all that. Is it of any use? For an ordinary person, these things are useless things. Rather, they might even become burdensome. If you have that tremendous capacity of remembering everything in your life, what a burden it would be, even the smallest detail. Even with all this forgetfulness, we are not able to control our mind. If we start remembering every incident that has taken place in our lives, we will go mad. What then is the use of remembering the past lives? For a spiritual person, remembering the past lives produces dispassion. We get attached in this life. This is my family. These are my children. These are my friends. This is my house. This is my country. All fanaticism comes there. Selfishness comes there. But supposing a person remembers 100 lives, past lives. One time he was born in England. Another time he was born in Australia. Third time he was born in India. And there have been so many mothers and fathers. And he may also remember those who were friends in the past lives have become enemies now. And those whom he considers as enemies in this life might have been closest friends in past lives. And then he gets tremendous detachment. Because in life, like drama, everything changes. Have you not seen actors? In one cinema, he may be the hero. In another cinema, he may be the villain. So, tremendous amount of detachment comes. All the attachment which is blocking the progress of a man in this life, it just disappears if only we remember who is a mother, who is a father, and who is all that. Detachment comes. So he progresses further. Those who observe tremendous cleanliness, purity, external and internal, shaucha, for them tremendous dispassion comes. Because we think by washing this body, the body is becoming clean. Is it real? Does it really become clean however much we wash it? No. There are so many dirty things in this world. As I mentioned, somebody asked me, can I take God's name when I am in lavatory, toilet? I said, why not? After all, you are a living toilet. You are carrying it all the time. And if you have to observe that rule, then you will never be able to take God's name in any life, so long as a physical body is there, isn't it? This body is a source of tremendous uncleanliness. And we get attached to it, thinking that it is very clean, very nice. We put lot of perfume to cover the smell that emanates from us. Stop washing for a day, then you will see what happens. So those who observe shaucha, cleanliness, even to such an extent it becomes a kind of psychological disease. Have you not seen that? They are not never satisfied however much they clean things. This usually results in ordinary people, what is called a mental disease, psychological disease. But for spiritual aspirants, it produces tremendous amount of dispassion. Everything is unclean in this world. And so, it only pushes them forward towards God. God is the only pure object in this world. And also, shaucha produces, according to Patanjali, it gives concentration. It gives control over the senses. It makes a person fit to progress in spiritual life. That is also true. And those who practice the quality called contentment, to them comes incomparable happiness. Contentment itself is happiness. But when it is practiced as a great virtue, under all circumstances, the man is incomparably happy. Whatever is given to him, he is extremely happy. Incomparable happiness. It's a wonderful word. Comparable happiness. I have this, I am quite happy. But if I have the other one, I would be a little more happy. That is called comparison. But a man who is contented with what he has, his mind acquires that state, is happy all the time. And that happiness can never be compared to anyone who doesn't practice that virtue. Those who practice austerity, their body becomes perfect, their sense organs also become perfect. What does it perfection means? That there will be no bodily defect. Yoga nowadays is practiced as an aid to health, good health, you know that. There are thousands of schools in India and especially in the West. What is the purpose of this practice of yoga? It is for making the body healthy, acquire stamina, so that they can live long. But it never becomes perfect. Why? Though it goes in the name of yoga, They only practice yoga asanas, certain postures, bend the body and contort the body. But they don't observe the other rules and regulations of it. So those who practice austerity, and their body becomes perfect. For perfect body is a good aid in realizing God. Sense organs become extremely keen. It is also said, a yogi could see far away things. Any distance is no matter for him at all. He can hear what is going on. His body acquires extraordinary sensitivity. His sense organs become very, very acute. These are all special siddhis. And those who acquire the quality of swadhyaya means, I said, study of scriptures, means keeping the mind on higher thoughts. They have the vision of one's chosen deity. Even yogis can practice concentration on their chosen deity. They can practice concentration on any object. It doesn't matter according to yoga. It is only according to bhaktas or devotees that one has to practice concentration on God. According to yoga, any object is fit enough to practice concentration. But in the case of a yogi who is also a devotee, he acquires the vision of God. This is the result of becoming perfect in swadhyaya. Those who surrender themselves to God, what is the benefit of it? He acquires samadhi. He attains samadhi or self-knowledge, self-realization. By the grace of God, God is realized. And if somebody can truly surrender one's will to God, then by His grace, one reaches the goal, one becomes free, liberated. And that is the ultimate purpose of every practice of spiritual discipline. These are the siddhis or extraordinary results mentioned by Patanjali. And so these practices are not merely meant as a kind of hard labor, but even a bit of practice of these qualities, you can see that they bring quite a good amount of results. Even if you want to become happy in this world, these practice of these qualities can make you much more happy than any other efforts in this world. Now let us come back to the seventh quality, which is called dhyana, meditation. And then very briefly, the eighth one, which is called samadhi. As we discussed earlier, according to Patanjali, samadhi is the ultimate goal that one has to aim. That is where one realizes one's own true nature, becomes liberated. And meditation is one step below that samadhi. Nowadays, the word meditation has become very popular. Everybody wants to meditate. What is important for us to discuss here is the sixth step is concentration. And the seventh step is meditation. Usually, we take that concentration and meditation are one and the same. If concentration and meditation are same, why did Patanjali mention this as a separate step and as a higher step? Is there any difference between these two? There is a tremendous amount of difference. But first let us see what Sri Ramakrishna had experienced when he was practicing the spiritual disciplines. He was reminiscing, during my sadhana period, I had all kinds of amazing visions. I distinctly perceived the communion of Atman. A person exactly resembling me entered my body and began to commune with each one of the six lotuses or chakras. The petals of these lotuses had been closed, but as each of them experienced the communion, the drooping flower bloomed and turned itself upward. Thus blossomed forth the lotuses at the centers of Mooladhara, Swadhisthana, Anahata, Vishuddha, Agna and Sahasrara. When I meditated during my sadhana, I used to think of the unflickering flame of a lamp set in a windless place. I used to visualize a flame which is unmoving in a where there is no wind, absolutely still. In deep meditation, a man is not at all conscious of the outer world. A hunter was aiming at a bird. A bridal procession passed along beside him, with the groom's relatives and friends, music and horses. It took a long time for the procession to pass the hunter, but he was not at all conscious of it. He did not know that the bridegroom had gone by. Another example Sri Ramakrishna gives. A man was angling in a lake all by himself. After a long while, the float began to move. Now and then its tip touched the water. The angler was holding the rod tight in his hands, ready to pull it up. When a passerby stopped and said, "Sir, can you tell me where Mr. Banerjee lives?" There was no reply from the angler, who was just on the point of pulling up the rod. Again and again, the stranger said to him in a loud voice, "Sir, can you tell me where Mr. Banerjee lives?" But the angler was unconscious of everything around him. His hands were trembling, his eyes fixed on the float. The stranger was annoyed and went on. When he had gone quite a way, the angler's float sank under water, and with one pull of the rod, the man landed the fish. He wiped the sweat from his face with his towel and then shouted after the stranger, "Hey, come here, listen." But the man would not turn his face. After much shouting, however, he came back and said to the angler, "Why are you shouting at me?" "What did you ask me about?" said the angler. The stranger replied, "I repeated the question so many times, and now you are asking me to repeat it once more." The angler said, "At that time, my float was about to sink, so I did not hear a word of what you said." That is one example of how deep meditation would be. A person can achieve such single-mindedness in meditation that he will see nothing, hear nothing, he will not be conscious even of touch. A snake may crawl over his body, but he will not know it. Neither of them will be aware of the other. That was absolutely true. That was the own experience of Sri Ramakrishna. Even Swami Vivekananda's life, there is such an incident. As a young boy, once they were playing at meditation, and the room where he was, it must have been an attic, and probably nobody entered into that room for ages. These boys opened it, went there, playing at meditation. It was a play for everybody, excepting Narendra, for whom it was no play, it was real. And all the boys sat in meditation posture, and opening the eyes, looking here and there, suddenly they saw a cobra coming near, crawling nearby. And naturally they shouted and then ran out of the room. But Narendra did not move. And then the boys went and reported to his parents. They came running with a stick. By that time the snake must have disappeared. And then they shook him, and then he came to consciousness. They asked, "Did you not see the snake?" He said, "I was completely unaware of what has come." But that's why Sri Ramakrishna used to call him Dhyana Siddha. He is perfect in meditation from his very birth. Such was Narendra. Not to speak of Narendra, even great scientists, even they achieve this state. It's not meditation really, but deep concentration, intense concentration. I heard an incident from our past President Maharaj Swami Bhuteshananda. When he was a young student, at that time, Sir Jagadish Chandra Bose, a famous Indian scientist, was living in Calcutta. He became very famous even in the West. So these students, once they visited him, they went to his house and they wanted to talk with him. His wife told him that he is there on the roof. So they went to the roof. This scientist was sitting in an easy chair and they went near to him. And what were they observing? This man was completely oblivious of his surroundings. He did not notice that the students came and they were standing before him. Probably 15-20 minutes passed. Then he became aware and he asked, "When did you come?" Now, was he sleeping? You could say, if when we are asleep, we also become oblivious of the whole world. No, he was fully conscious, but he was deeply thinking on his own subject because he was quite conscious. You can say who was thinking and who is sleeping. It is possible through a long practice of it. In deep meditation, the sense organs stop functioning. The mind doesn't look outward. It's like the closing the gate of the outer court in a house. There are five objects of the senses: form, taste, smell, touch and sound. They are all left outside. At the beginning of meditation, the objects of the senses appear before the aspirant. But when the meditation becomes deep, they no longer bother him. They are left outside. How many during my meditation. So these are some of the experiences that Sri Ramakrishna himself had undergone. That from his own experience he is telling what a meditation really is. He also used to give a simple example. That a mother bird sitting on her eggs, hatching the eggs. It seems when it is sitting, the bird is intensely concentrating on its chicks, helping them as it were through its mind to grow up and break the shell and come out. It seems the eyes of the bird turn upwards at that time. There are, if you observe some of the old Kathamrita, you will notice that small picture. Once Sri Ramakrishna asks him, "Can you bring some such picture?" And he brought, and a small one is printed there on the Bengali edition of the Gospel. That was an example he used to give. Sri Ramakrishna used to be in such deep state of meditation or samadhi that he could really spend months even in that state. Swami Vivekananda, all the direct disciples, many of those after that, many monks could do that. Now, let us go back to our question. Why did Patanjali say that concentration is the sixth step, whereas meditation is the seventh step? Most of us think sitting still and thinking deeply is a spiritual means. It is a good spiritual aid, but it is no indication of spirituality itself. When a scientist deeply concentrates on his subject, his mind is really on that subject. But we don't see that he becomes spiritual. He might be, but he may not be spiritual too. He may be very, very worldly. Any great man achieves greatness only by concentration. But that doesn't mean that person becomes really spiritual. Meditation is an entirely different process. It is only when a person steps into meditation, his spiritual life can be said to have started really. So what are the differences between concentration and meditation? Very briefly, I would like to pass to it. First difference, in ordinary concentration, the mind is focused on an external object or a mental idea. Real meditation is a complete reversal of this process. It means turning the mind or the self back upon its source. Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful example. He says, that the police sergeant goes at night watching the city, and he carries, in olden times, you know, they used to carry a torch light. You must remember, these parables are in those days of Sri Ramakrishna when electricity was not a common thing. He carries a torch light. With the help of the torch light, he could see everyone's face, but nobody could see his face. If someone wants to see his face, then they will have to request, "Sir, will you kindly turn the light upon your own face?" And if he is gracious, he will do that. This is the first difference between concentration and meditation. In concentration, the mind is focused, but either on an external object or a mental idea. Though an external object also comes in the form of sensation, if there is a form of this external object in the mind. But by idea we mean there are certain things in this world which have no corresponding external forms. For example, service, love. What object is there? Is an object called love? It's a mental, it's a conception. It is an idea in the mind. One can meditate on love, one can meditate on service, one can meditate on devotion. So, it is always the mind is focused. Though there is concentration, it's not thinking anything else. It's only thinking one object. But real meditation is reversal. Not the object is not important, but that source which is the energy which is focusing the mind, that source is important. The subject or the seer, he is important. The person who is meditating, he is important. The object is only an aid so that he can focus. An example is given. If you want to see your face, then you will have to go in front of a mirror. If you stand in front of a stone wall, you can't see your face. You will have to go in front of a mirror. So this practicing concentration is like making the mind a kind of mirror. The purpose is not to look at the mirror, but the purpose is to look at one's own face. That is the most important difference. Concentration is necessary, but it doesn't lead to spiritual life. It leads to greater power, that's all. Secondly, in ordinary concentration, the sense organs are active and contact with the external world is not cut off. But during meditation, the mind alone becomes active. In concentration, it is always thinking about external objects. Though in the mind, what do I do? You are meditating on a beautiful scenery. Why are you concentrating on a beautiful scenery? Because it gives you pleasure. The purpose of every external object is to provide an experience to the seer. Usually, that experience comes in the form of seeking happiness or pleasure. But the purpose of meditation is not to seek pleasure. Therefore, the objects have got to be stopped. The mind should function. It must become like a mirror. It is the mind itself which becomes the object of concentration in meditation. Because the mind is the instrument by which one can experience the self, at least in the beginning stages. Third difference. In concentration, the mind is thinking of many thoughts. But in meditation, there is only one thought. In concentration, we think, I am thinking, say, about a flower. But actually, I am not thinking only of the idea of flower. It is a broken, but many broken thoughts about the flower coming in quick succession. The idea of flower comes. Immediately another idea of the flower comes. Another idea of the flower comes. The example given is that of the motion picture. You know, you can see the motion, a man is running. How do you see it? A succession of frames run at a particular speed gives the idea that the person is running. You can compare it to this process of concentration. But what is meditation? Meditation is, as it were, stop the projector. Let there be only one frame there. A single vritti, only one single vritti functions there. When we are able to do that, that concentration turns into meditation. This is the third difference. There is a fourth difference. Ordinary concentration is the result of attachment to various external objects, whereas meditation is the result of detachment. What a wonderful definition given. Ordinarily, a scientist gets concentrated on his subject. What is the motive? The motive is not spiritual development. He is attached to the external object. He wants to discover the secrets of that external object. He is obsessed by the external object. He is not trying to find his own self. He is not trying to seek who is it that is concentrating. What is the nature of the concentrator? No. He is only thinking about the object. How can I wrest its secrets? How can I improve things in this world? That is, there also concentration is necessary. But it is the result of attachment, because he wants to improve this world. Why does a man want to improve this world if he is not attached to it? Whereas meditation is exact reverse process. One must detach the mind from every external object. Only then the self reveals itself. This is one of the differences. Then there is another difference. Every mind has two powers. One of experiencing, another of creating. Either we are creating or we are experiencing. I see a book. These two processes are going on at the same time. That I am experiencing the ideas in that book. But I am not merely a passive experiencer. I am also adding my own understanding to it, interpreting it according to my own experience. I am altering many things in that book through my own experience. That is called creating. I am always reacting towards everything in this world. Take for example, that we are always judging people. Say, I am looking at you. Am I merely looking at you? If I merely look at you, that's an experience. But I am also creating. This person is old, that person is sleepy, the other person is listening nicely, he is a young man, he is an old man, he is put on black cloth, this man put on white cloth. Always I am creating something. I am not just merely experiencing. I am adding all these things to my experience. That's what creates all this problem. In concentration, that's what happens. We heighten this power of experiencing and creating. For example, if somebody is concentratedly listening to a beautiful piece of music, he is experiencing the beauty, the sweetness of the music, but at the same time, he is also creating his own experiences with it. He is also thinking, how nice it would be if I could also sing. No, unconsciously, we also try to sing, like children, you know, when last time our festival was going on, everybody was singing. One child also started singing. You can understand a child's singing. So, in meditation, we do not want either to experience or to create. We just want to take the aid of this object or this idea to make it a mirror so that I can see myself in the mirror. Let me give you another example. You want a mirror and you go to a shop. After all, what is the purpose of a mirror? To see your nice face. It's nice to you, may not be nice to other people. Just to see your face. Any mirror would do. But would you purchase any mirror? No, it must have a golden frame, it must look oval shape or some particular shape, it must be of such a size. you want to see your own face, a small mirror will do. Why do people put on life-size mirrors? I don't understand. That's what I mean, creating. We are interacting. It's not only a mirror, it also must be beautiful for us to experience. That's where we are creating things. Books can be printed. After all, you don't eat the book. The purpose of a book is to enjoy the ideas. Well, even ordinary paperback also will do. But will the publishers do it? No. They will put such a beautiful design, cover design of color and size and print. They know how to catch your attention. You may not read the book after paying so much money. Most of the money you pay only for the cover design. If I want a book without the cover, it would cost much less. But unfortunately, it's not available. You have to purchase the cover also. Meditation is that process where we stop experiencing and creating, and where we would like to direct our attention to the seer, to the pure consciousness, to the self. That is the difference. Meditation is also an attempt to make the mind stop creating by seeking the source of experience. Every experience has its source, and that source is our own true self. Not only there is a self within us, there is also a self in the object. When we forget that self, then we get caught. What is the idea? Let me give you an example. Once a woman came to Sri Ramakrishna and said, "I can't meditate. I am disturbed in my meditation." He immediately understood. What pictures come into your mind during meditation? She said, "I am bringing up a nephew, and his loving face, sweet face, always floats in my mind, especially during meditation." He said, "Fine. From now onwards, bring him up as child Krishna, as God. Bathe him, feed him, caress him, look after him. Do everything as you have been doing. But don't think it is your nephew. Think that it is baby Krishna." And she had such faith in his words. Immediately she started practicing. Within a few months, it was said that she had the vision of baby Krishna. Now this example proves to us that when we are experiencing or creating an object, we are not seeking the source, the essence of that object. We are only seeking the externalities, the body, the mind, the beauty, the shape, the size, the taste, etc. Now, the purpose of meditation is to stop creating but seek the source of every object, both external and the source which is within us too. Another difference between concentration and meditation is, in concentration, though the mind is focused, it always works in time, because every object can be concentrated only in time and in space, though in a very subtle form. The purpose of meditation is to transcend both time and space and causality. Through meditation, you will not have any idea of time. You remain in timelessness, which is God, which is the self. Another point, difference between concentration and meditation is, concentration is an unconscious process involving self-forgetfulness, while meditation is a conscious process. It is a self-directed process. When a person is deeply concentrated, he is dealing with external things. In many times, you know, when we are driving, concentrating on driving, we become unconscious of what is happening, what our hands are doing, what our back is doing. You know, when you drive a car, how many things do you remember on the way? You have seen plenty of things, but do you remember? It's an unconscious process. Your consciousness is working only on that object where you are concentrating. Whereas in meditation, the purpose of meditation is to become fully conscious of what we are concentrating upon. This is a very peculiar thing. When you become conscious, it, you enter into a spiritual realm. Why? Because you don't become conscious only of the object. You become conscious of something which is within the object, which is the source of the object, which is God, which is the Self. You find consciousness itself. The purpose of meditation is to live in consciousness. Not becoming conscious is a time-bound process. Living in consciousness is just its reverse. That is an important difference. And concentration is not just looking, is just looking or focusing on an object. But meditation is not just looking at an object, but is an attempt to enter into living relationship with it. For example, if you are concentrating on Sri Ramakrishna, what is it you are concentrating? It may be his photo or form that you see in the photo or picture. Is he alive? Does he come out alive to you? Maybe with your concentrating power you can see perfect photograph in your mind. Whereas in meditation, he comes out alive. There is a living relationship. He becomes so alive that you are bound, you are forced to establish a loving relationship with him. This establishment of a living relationship, a loving relationship, is what distinguishes between ordinary concentration and meditation. Finally, we know the difference between concentration and meditation by their results. When a person has great power of concentration, he achieves greater power over the object on which he is concentrating. When a scientist concentrates on nature, it yields its secrets. When a physicist concentrates, he discovers the secrets of this world. When a musician concentrates, he brings out music alive. When a writer concentrates, his thoughts become living. But he might be pure. They, all of them might be purely worldly. They will become great in the world. But when a person meditates on God, then it leads him to God. It takes him to God. He becomes unworldly. He becomes spiritual. These are quite different results. I will give one example and stop this talk. In our mythologies, it is said that several demons wanted power. So they went and performed austerity. Austerity means intense thinking of God. They practiced intense concentration, tapas. And God appeared before them and granted them boons. What boons did they seek? I want to become most powerful man in this world and kidnap all the women. Their husband should not be able to stop me. I will kill all my enemies. Nobody should be able to overpower me. You see, even though they performed that tremendous austerity, what was the result? They became more worldly. Whereas when devotees pray to God, meditate upon Him, when He appears, they say, Lord, we want to be away from this world. We want to become spiritual. We don't want anything of the spiritual things. The results are totally different. One leads to worldliness, intensified worldliness. Another leads to total liberation from worldliness or bondage. They become liberated. Briefly, these are the differences between concentration and meditation. In our next class, we will look at spiritual progress from the other teacher's viewpoint, which is also very interesting. In our very next class, we shall see how Ramanuja had defined what is sadhana, spiritual practice, and how it leads to the ultimate goal of realization of God. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.